Well, last week we started a series on solitude. We talked about Jesus going into the quiet place often, right? Jesus often retreated to quiet and lonely places. And he modeled this as a practice of solitude for us. So this year we've been going through all the practices. Solitude, by far, small group already knows this, but solitude by far is the hardest one for me. And I think we would all agree probably by the end that it's tough for all of us. And so today we're talking about what happens when we get quiet enough, when we finally get quiet enough to encounter ourselves. So this is a message I don't really want to preach because I feel like it's, you know, however many fingers I'm pointing at you, there's more pointing back at me, right? But we're going to do it anyway, all right? So buckle up. It'll be fun. It probably won't be fun, but we can suffer together this morning. No, this will be good. This is practical stuff. I think it's insightful. But we're talking about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. You know, just not a great scripture, but I mean one that we need to approach. So, most people avoid solitude, and it's for the reason that it uncovers what's underneath, right? It's not because people hate peace. It's not because they hate prayer or they hate, being in a relationship with God, but it's because it exposes what noise and what distraction usually helps cover up in our lives. In a 2014 study, now granted, this is what was that, 12 years ago? I'm bad at math. 12 years ago, 2014 study of the University of Virginia, researchers asked participants to sit alone in silence with just their thoughts for 15 minutes. So college students got paid money to sit alone in a quiet room for 15 minutes. No phone, no music, no conversation, no stimulation at all, just silence and their thoughts. Now, most people said beforehand, 15 minutes, that is easy, right? No problem. Easy money. But during the experiment, people became visibly uncomfortable. Some grew anxious. Others said their minds started racing. One of the craziest parts of this experiment is that the people who participated were given a button that actually gave you a mild shock, right? An electric shock. They were given a button. And several of them, shocked themselves just to be not alone with their own thoughts, just to have some sort of stimulation out of silence and solitude. That says something profound about the human condition. We are constantly surrounding ourselves with noise because deep down many of us are afraid of what the silence might reveal. But here's the truth. Solitude does not create chaos inside of us. It just reveals what is going on. It reveals what's already there. Solitude is not creating chaos. It's revealing the chaos. And that's why solitude matters, because God cannot heal what we refuse to face, what we refuse to acknowledge or to sit with. Today, we're going to look at another point in Jesus' life when he turns to solitude. We're going to look at Matthew 26, verses 36. We're actually going to go to 42. I was only four off, so you'll just have to cut me some slack there. But starting in verse 36, it says, "Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, 'Sit here while I go over there and pray.' He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him." That's James and John. And he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little further, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will." Then he returned to his disciples, found them sleeping. "Couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour?" he asked Peter. "Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away a second time and prayed, "My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done." All right. So Jesus, in the Garden of Gethsemane, just hours before the cross, in Matthew 26 tells us he began to be sorrowful and troubled. And then he says, "My soul is overwhelmed to the point of death." I want us to notice something here. This is important. Jesus enters solitude, and what comes to the surface? Pain, right? Pain rises to the surface. Not peace, pain. This isn't what we would expect, is it? We assume that if we get alone with God, we should immediately feel calm and inspired and refreshed and renewed. But a lot of the time, the first thing solitude does is expose what we've buried under schedules and scrolling and whatever else we use to distract ourselves. So we're going to look at four truths today about ourselves and solitude. Think of like you're in the doctor's office and they got all those pamphlets. This one would say solitude and you, okay? That's what we're going to talk about today. Us and solitude. Number one, solitude exposes what's beneath the surface. Some people, when they finally slow down, they realize how exhausted they are. Not just physically, but their soul is tired. You guys ever had that kind of tired where you sleep? You get good night's sleep and it doesn't fix it? Anybody been there? Like, I could have swore I slept 9 hours last night and I am still just exhausted, right? Or you're tired enough that you take a vacation and you come back and you still feel empty. If you're a parent and you take your kids on a vacation, I mean, that's pretty much the end game anyway, right? Still just parenting in a different spot. Or you have a day off of work and you think, all right, this is the day, this is the rest I needed, and then you still just feel drained the next day. Why is that? Well, it's because our souls have been carrying more than what they were designed to carry. I think about Elijah in 1 Kings 19. He has this incredible victory at Mount Carmel, and then emotionally he just collapses. He runs into the wilderness and he says, "God, I can't do this anymore." And what does God do first? He lets him sleep. And then he lets him eat. And then he lets him sleep again. And I think he feeds him a second time. Before God gives Elijah direction, he gives him rest. This is important because rest is not laziness. Rest is holy. Some of you don't need another sermon right now. Some of you need solitude because it exposes exhaustion that we've been ignoring. Sometimes solitude will expose fear. Have you ever noticed how loud your thoughts get when everything else gets quiet? You sit down to pray and suddenly your brain starts going in every direction. Like, what about the bills? And, not the Buffalo Bills, but like the bills that you would pay. My brain would be thinking about both simultaneously because that's just how I'm wired. But they got a new coach this year. We really don't know how the Bills are going to be. Probably not great. But your brain goes to your debts. We'll say your debts. What about, that thinks about things like, what if this relationship falls apart? Or what if my kids struggle? Or what if I fail? Or what if something really bad happens? Fear starts to rise to the surface. Many of us don't realize how anxious we actually are because we stay constantly distracted. We scroll and stream and we stay busy because activity can mask anxiety, right? Anybody go there, start to get a little anxious and just busy hands? I'm going to bake something, I'm going to build something, I'm going to do something, right? It masks what we're going through. Silence, solitude, exposes it. And then sometimes solitude reveals sadness. You know, grief is a huge part of being a human being. Some of us are carrying grief that we never processed, carrying disappointment that we buried, pain that we've minimized, or loss that we've just rushed past. And we finally get quiet before God and the sadness starts to surface. Maybe tears, some memories return, emotions that we buried years ago suddenly arise. We want to shut that down, right? We don't want to deal with that. Push that back down, we'll deal with that later. What if that grief, what if that sadness coming up isn't weakness, but it's God inviting you into healing? You know, Psalm 34 says that the Lord is close to the brokenhearted. Maybe that's why some people never experience God's closeness as much as they should, because they don't slow down long enough to acknowledge that they're brokenhearted. Solitude also exposes anger. Some people discover in silence just how much resentment they're carrying. Old conversations replay in your mind. Old wounds open up. You mentally rehearse arguments that you've had with people who hurt you. It's amazing because many of us think that we're over it, right? Until we get quiet. Because noise can temporarily suppress anger. But silence and solitude reveals it. And underneath anger is usually just hurt, right? There's a saying in the counseling world that anger is often just sadness wearing armor. In other words, some people aren't actually angry people, they're just wounded people. And finally, solitude exposes shame. Because when all the distractions are stripped away, we see ourselves honestly. No image management, no performance, no pretending, just us before God. And that can feel terrifying. So we spend so much time in our lives trying to look strong and successful and spiritual and put together, but solitude removes that mask. And that's why many people avoid being alone, because they're afraid of what they'll find under the surface. So, that's going to bring us to number two. Distraction keeps us from healing. So silence exposes what's underneath, and distraction keeps us from healing those underlying issues. In Luke chapter 8, Jesus gives the parable of the sower. Everybody heard of that one? Where you cast seeds and some of them grow and some of them don't. After he gives this parable, his disciples pull him aside and they ask him what he meant by that. And he gives them this kind of ambiguous saying about the knowledge of the kingdom and the secrets they've been given to you. And so then he tells them, this is what he says to that question. He answers their question like this. This is the meaning of the parable. The seed is the word of God. Those along the path are the ones who hear. And then the devil comes and takes away the words from their hearts so that they may not believe and be saved. Those on the rocky ground are the ones who receive the word with joy when they hear it, but they have no root. They believe for a while, but in the time of testing, they fall away. Verse 14, the seed that fell among the thorns stands for those who hear, but as they go on their way, they are choked by life's worries, riches, and pleasures, and they do not mature. So Jesus directly connects things like distraction, anxiety, pleasure, busyness to spiritual stagnation. They get caught up in that stuff and they do not mature. The issue isn't that the seed wasn't real, right? The seed was very real. The issue is that the other things crowded it out. The enemy doesn't always destroy just with evil things. Sometimes he distracts us into numbness. Solitude helps to fight that. It helps to uncover these problems that Jesus is talking about. But without solitude, we keep covering with distractions and they just stay buried. Here's the problem. What stays buried does not stay harmless, right? Just because we bury something down doesn't mean it's not still hurting us or hurting others. Unhealed pain, buried pain, will leak. It will leak into our marriages, into our parenting, to our friendships, into our leadership, our reactions, our emotional health. That's why distraction has become one of these primary coping mechanisms of our culture. We numb ourselves constantly with things like our phone and our entertainment and shopping and food and work and social media. I'm sure there's a long list. We could probably go on forever. The point is, it's anything to avoid sitting still long enough to feel what's really happening inside of us. I forget where I heard it, but somebody compared a smartphone to a pacifier, right? It's a pretty good analogy. Baby grabs a pacifier to soothe the discomfort. We just grab the phone to soothe the discomfort. The moment it feels a little awkward, we just distract. Or the moment we feel a little lonely, we distract. Or the moment we feel a little anxious, we just distract. We've become uncomfortable with silence. And if we're not careful, we can even use church and spirituality as a way to distract from that stuff. Instead of grieving, we can just quote a Bible verse. Instead of healing, we could serve constantly. We could stay really active in the church, and emotionally we're just falling apart inside. Don't hear me wrong. Serving in the church, quoting Bible verses, staying active in church, those are all very good things. Those are parts of living as a follower of Jesus. Those are great, but they do not take the place of grieving and healing. Does that make sense? Oh, goodness. Does that make sense? Do I have to start over? We've got time, don't we? Race doesn't start till like close to one, right? Today, we're, no, I'm just kidding. All right. Jesus, he shows us another way to do this. We're going to look at number three. He shows us how to face pain. And he shows us in three ways here. So in Gethsemane, Jesus goes directly into the place of pain. He models three kind of movements that teach us how to process pain with God. The first one is to give God your feelings. Jesus says right out the gate, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death." This is raw honesty. It's not performance. It's not pretending to be okay. Jesus just tells the Father how he feels. Some of us need to learn how to pray like that. I say a lot of us don't pray honestly. We perform, or we think prayers where we impress God with fancy words and polished language. Prayer's not a performance. It's where we become real. And the cool thing is that God is not intimidated by your emotions. He's not intimidated by how you feel. So when we practice silence and solitude, you can bring him your fear and your confusion and your bitterness and your disappointment. You know, the Psalms are filled with prayers like that, saying things like, "How long, O Lord?" or "Why have you forsaken me?" or "Where are you, God?" It's not rebellion. It's a relationship. And healthy relationships can handle honesty. And solitude is where this is practiced. Think about a child who falls and scrapes their knee. A healthy kid, right? A kid with a healthy relationship with a parent is not going to hide that scrape or hide that wound from their parent. What are they going to do? They're going to open mouth sob until their parent, you know, they're going to run toward their parent sobbing. Why do they do that? Because they trust the parent to care for their pain. God is inviting us to do the same thing. The second thing Jesus does is give God his desires. Jesus next says, "Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me." In other words, he's openly saying, "God, I do not want to do this." This matters because Christians think that spiritual maturity means that we get to kind of pretend we don't have desires and we don't talk about the things that we want to do or don't want to do. But the thing is that God already knows that you have desires. He knows what you want. He knows what you fear. He knows what you wish you could change. The issue is not whether desire exists. The issue is whether we surrender them. Right? Wanting to do something or wanting things is not an issue. God knows that. Jesus wanted this to not happen. Right? By this, I mean dying on the cross. He wanted it to not happen, but he surrendered it. Some of us want healing, but we don't want vulnerability, or we want purpose, but we don't want sacrifice, or we want transformation, but we don't want surrender. It's like scheduling a doctor's appointment and then going into the doctor and not telling the doctor about your symptoms. Just saying, "Well, I'm in a lot of pain, but I don't really want to talk about it." And then just leaving. Right? That doesn't do any good for anybody. Healing begins with honesty. many of us keep trying to hide our true desires from God, even though He already knows them and He already sees them. All right, the last thing we see Jesus do is give God His trust. So after all this, I really am hurting. I'm sorrowful to the point of death. I really, really don't want to do this. Then what does He say? Yet not my will, but yours be done. This is surrender. Surrender is the turning point of formation. Because God gives us peace when we let go, right? Peace doesn't come from controlling everything. Peace comes from trusting God with what we can't control. So surrender is going to feel more like dying at first than it's going to feel like freedom. But on the other side of that surrender is peace. And solitude is where we practice that surrender, giving up distractions and hurrying, right? The controllables, the things we can control. When we're picking up our phone, what we're putting on our calendar, what we're choosing to numb and what with. We can control that stuff. So we can surrender that, and solitude helps us to practice that. We give up distractions and we give up hurrying away from our fears and our desires. Have you ever ridden in a car with someone who's driving through like a storm or terrible weather or a windy road or anything like that? You're holding the handle, right? You're holding onto the seat. You're saying a little prayer. You're anxious. You're watching every turn. But eventually you realize either I trust this person driving or I don't. Many of us are trying to grab the steering wheel from God. The problem is we can't carry what God carries. We aren't meant to control everything. And when we practice solitude, we submit all of that. We surrender control and we get to slowly give away the stuff that we're carrying and give it over to God. All right. So that's dealing. That's facing the pain. Number four, healing happens when we move toward the pain. Isn't this fun? I told you. I warned you. So this is the invitation of solitude. Stop running. Stop numbing. Stop distracting ourselves. And finally sit before God honestly. To let what's in us just rise to the surface. And then offer all of it to Him. Our feelings, our desires, our fears, our grief, our shame, whatever we're carrying. We have to learn how to face our pain honestly and in the presence of God. Not escaping it or denying it or spiritualizing it, but facing it. Because healing begins where honesty begins. I love the iceberg illustration, right? Counselors, spiritual formation, the iceberg is used in all kinds of illustrations. But the point is only a small part of the iceberg is visible above the water. Most of it is hidden underneath. That is how our soul works. People see the surface version of us. But underneath are wounds and fears and insecurities and memories and struggles and desires, and all that stuff remains hidden to those who encounter us. If we never let God beneath the surface, then we're never going to experience deep transformation, right? If we're not letting God below the surface, then surface level transformation is all we're ever going to experience. That's why solitude matters. Not because silence changes us, but because silence exposes us to ourselves. And then it opens us up to God. Now here's the good news. When you finally face what's inside you, you don't find condemnation waiting there. You find Jesus. That's the beauty of the gospel. In solitude, we're fully exposed and loved and fully known and fully accepted. In fact, Romans 8 says that there is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. It means that you don't have to fear the quiet. God is not meeting you with condemnation. He's meeting you with love. He wants you to be healed and whole and be able to sit for 15 minutes without shocking yourself. You know what? That's what He wants. He wants a lot more for you than that. But that's baseline. You don't have to fear what rises to the surface. And here's why. Because Jesus isn't waiting in the silence to shame you. He's waiting to heal you. So this week, the challenge is simple. Turn the noise down. Sit with God, even for 10 minutes. No phone, no distraction, no performance. Just 10 minutes a day this whole week. When fear rises, give it to God. When grief rises, give it to God. When anger rises, give it to God. When shame starts to rise, give it to God. Because transformation begins when we stop distracting and covering up and running away. Would you pray with me this morning? God, thank you. Thank you for this gift of solitude. Honestly, God, help us to see it as a gift. Help us to lean into solitude this week and to silence and to stillness. And help us just to lean on you in those moments. Not our phone or what we're making for dinner or what we can buy on Amazon. God, help us to be a people that can be open and honest with you, because that's where formation happens. And God, that's what we all really want, is just to be transformed from the inside out. But we have to be able to let you in. We have to slow down enough to be able to meet with you, to hear your voice, and to know what it is that you want for us. So as we go about our lives this week, and as we have a day off tomorrow, just help us to take a few minutes and practice silence and solitude and stillness. And whatever rises, whatever has been buried underneath, whatever comes up, God, we know that you can handle it. Help us to trust in you, the one who controls all things. And help us to surrender our control, because it's really just a facade anyway. God, we thank you for your grace.